talk to you from a subject that's probably quite hard for me to talk about in one way, because I'm going to share a little bit later from... I like to talk not from theory, but from experience. And so just one sec. Just realizing I need to record this, just in case. So I'm going to share a little bit from experience as well. But the verse that God gave me for this morning was Galatians 5:1, which is, I think we might have it up, or I'm standing in the way, which is, it's for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Which is quite an amazing verse, and something that, you know, I've sort of played around in my head lots of times to try and really, what is it you're saying in that? What is it you're saying in that? And the more I sort of think about it, the more I get out of it. So I'm just going to share a little bit this morning. There's a lot more to it, but I'm just going to share a little bit. Just to give you a little bit of background on this. So this is Paul talking to the church at Galatians. And he came through the church, through that area previously, and shared the message of Christ to them and told them about Jesus, and they accepted Jesus and the promise and the gospel message, and were sort of set free to enjoy what the message of Jesus, that he'd come to set them free rather than the law that they were keeping at the time. But what happened is that the religious leaders of the day came along and were there and started saying, well, is that quite true? And started infiltrating, really, or giving them little, just questioning things, and started influencing them, and saying that they were told that they must also be circumcised, and they must also follow the law of Moses to be truly included in his family. In other words, they were actually giving the message, it's by works that you are saved, not by grace. And so, in the context of that, Paul was writing to them to say, come on, don't you remember the first things that we taught you, the first things that you experienced? And so that's why he was saying this, from that perspective. It's for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm there, and don't let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. And what do you think the yoke of slavery is? This is rhetorical, you don't have to answer. In this case, exactly, the law. But I think there's also yokes of slavery. There's probably lots of different types of yokes of slavery. In this case, it was the law, and that's probably an extremely important one. But I think it's anything that enslaves us, that stops us from being free. And probably the law is the big one. But there are other things that stop us. We'll go a little bit into that in a minute. But the Galatians had experienced Jesus, but then gone back in it. That's why it says, do not let yourself be burdened again. Because they have been burdened, they've been free, and now they've been burdened again. That's why it said that. And they've gone back to, from experiencing God's presence, back into trying to earn his love by performance. And I think that the Galatians aren't the only ones at risk of that happening. And I think it's in the Bible because it's a message to us all. You know, sometimes we can first experience the amazing love and power of Jesus. And we can be sort of feel really light and on fire, and, you know, because we've met the Maker. Now, not everything in our lives might have changed at that instance. We may have changed, but not everything has changed. But there is something about meeting our Maker, meeting Jesus, our Redeemer in that way. That is about the presence of him in our lives, not what we're doing. And I think that can be similar to us, is that we can experience Jesus' presence in our lives, but somehow get caught up in all the conditions and all the rules and performing and all the things that go on in life that try to ensnare us and rob us from freedom. We Claire's nodding. We had a very good talk from Claire a few weeks ago about the rules. And if you haven't heard that on the podcast, I'd encourage you to do that. It's really very, very good. You know, we can be enslaved by those things. And you may be saying, you know, I've read this verse a lot. I know I'm free. But is that, my question is that your experience or is it just theory? That really is where the rubber hits the road. We can say, yes, I'm free, God's made me free. And yes, he has. But is it our experience? Do we really live in that every single day? I suspect we don't. And so that's why our strap line is we're on a journey with friends to freedom. Because it is a journey to freedom. We're not going to suddenly get free and then we're free for the rest of our lives. It is an ongoing journey. So how do we know that we aren't free? Again, rhetorical question. You don't have to answer that. I just like throwing them out. Well, do you ever get anxious? Fearful? Angry? Frustrated? Maybe nervous? There's lots of yeses going on. So that's good. We're the right bunch this morning. Well, all of those things and more. Those sort of emotions, and I'm going to call them sort of the negative emotions that we experience, show us that we're not free. Because it's just a demonstration of the fact that we're not free. And often that a sustained emotion like that I'm not just saying sometimes you can just have a sudden emotion of frustration and then it sort of leaves you. But I would just say that if you really struggle with something like frustration or anger or that actually winds you up and then it puts you in a mood all day, that sort of sustained emotion, I would suggest that points to something in our lives where we're not free. So that's how you can sort of tell. Now, I'm saying this not to judge anyone or to make anyone feel guilty, because I'm hoping that I'm going to help you become free. I'm free from that. See, would you get nervous or embarrassed about standing up here and sharing something? No, some won't. Some do. I must admit that sometimes I do. I mean, I don't feel so nervous right now. I don't think, it's probably not always my most natural thing standing up here, but I feel confident that God's given me something to say and that he wants me to say it. But I have been at times quite nervous about coming up here, and I've sort of asked myself, why is that? Why am I feeling nervous? And the answer I shared probably in another previous talk a while back is that I was probably scared about what other people thought of me. That's why I was nervous. So that shows that there is an area where I'm not free, because I care more about what other people think about me, and therefore I'm sort of changing my behaviour in some way, wanting to impress or wanting to do something for them to accept me. And don't know that I'm already accepted and loved by God, and that I'm standing in confidence with him. So that sort of, I'm just sharing an example from myself. But if you get nervous or embarrassed, I'm not saying don't look too deeply into everything, but ask why. Ask why. Because it might be that God's wanting to touch something on you, and actually underneath that, he's wanting to reveal to you, I've got you, you're important, you're special. You are valuable, and therefore you don't need to be worried about what other people are saying or what other people are thinking. And in that could be the key to you getting free. Okay? So the thought that came into my head this morning as I was singing and worshipping was the song This Is Me from The Greatest Showman. Yeah, it took me a while to see it. Kate actually had the DVD and said, we must watch this. So I'm a late person of watching it. But I quite enjoyed it actually. It was quite good. It wasn't necessarily my sort of thing, but I quite enjoyed it. But that This Is Me moment, has anyone not seen The Greatest Showman? Okay, so I'm sorry. But there is there is a you ought to see it. There is a song called This Is Me, and you might have heard the song, but it's somebody who has almost been fearful about revealing who they are, and comes out and starts singing that this is who I am, this is me, and there's something in the emotion of that, the power of that, that's quite releasing. And so this morning I just felt as I was standing there worshipping, that was my song, This Is Me, and I'm going to be me this morning. I'm not going to be anyone else. I'm not going to try and be someone who I'm not meant to be. This is me. And yeah, that's good. So, do you want to be free?
Yes.
That's the first question I've got. So, I've got a few little pointers here. Too big a Bible. Do you want to be free? That's the first question you need to ask yourself. Do you want to be free to be who God has designed you to be? I love what this Galatians 5 says in the Message, and I'm just going to read a little bit from the Message. Excuse me. So, I'll start from the beginning. Christ has set us free to live a free life. So take your stand. Never again let anyone put a harness of slavery on you. I am emphatic about this. This is Paul getting really enthused. The moment any one of you submits to circumcision or any other rule-keeping system, at that same moment, Christ's hard-won gift of freedom is squandered. I repeat my warning. The person who accepts the ways of circumcision trades all the advantages of the free life in Christ for the obligations of the slave life of the law. I suspect you would never intend this, but this is what happens. When you attempt to live by your own religious plans and projects, you are cut off from Christ. It's quite harsh, isn't it? When we're doing it our way, then we're cut off from Christ. And I feel that it's not Christ saying, I'm cutting you off. I just feel that it means that we can't serve two masters. We can't have it one way and then another way. That's not possible. So we automatically cut ourselves off from Christ. You fall out of grace. Meanwhile, we expectantly wait for a satisfying relationship with the Spirit. For in Christ, neither our most conscientious religion nor disregard of religion amounts to anything. What matters is something far more interior, faith expressed in love. You are running superbly. Who cut in on you, deflecting you from the true course of obedience? The detour doesn't come from the one who called you into the race in the first place. And please don't toss this off as insignificant. It only takes a minute amount of yeast, to permeate the entire loaf of bread. Deep down, the Master has given me confidence that you will not defect. But the one who is upsetting you, whoever he is, will bear the divine judgment. So, I've got a few little pointers that hopefully will help here. So, firstly, I believe that God is people use it as gentleman, but he is loving. He doesn't force us, so he invites us into the life of freedom. There's no forcing about it. So there's a question, and that's the first bit, is do we want to be free? So he's inviting us into a life of freedom. Now, the second point I've got is realise that we can't free ourselves. It says Christ has set us free. So it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. We don't free ourselves. It's Christ that sets us free. Now that takes all the hard work off, because we can't do it. We can't. No matter how much striving, no matter how much controlling things, trying to be better, none of it is going to set us free. It's Christ that sets us free. So how do we accept that then? And it's by surrender. It's us laying ourselves down and saying, "This is me, warts and all. This is me. I know. You know. This is who I am, and I'm surrendering myself to you." So it's a recognition, first of all, that we can't free ourselves, it's Christ who frees us. It's Jesus who frees us. And that is the key to our relationship with God. Continual surrender and recognition that we can't do it ourselves. If we're working at it, if we're trying really hard at being a better version of us, then I've got news for you. It's actually that yoke of slavery you've got around you. Because that isn't God's way. That was the old covenant, not the new covenant. And actually, God came and provided a way that we can experience grace, and we don't have to try anymore. We have to recognize that we can't do it, and it's in His strength that we are made strong. We need a revelation, number three, we need a revelation of who we are. God says, "You are mine." I remember 15 years ago, just over, when Nathan, my son, was born. And I remember holding him, and, you know, I looked at him and I didn't know what his abilities were. I didn't know what he would look like when he got older. I knew what he looked like as a baby, but that changes, isn't it? We all change. I didn't know any of that stuff, what he would do in the future. I don't know. But none of that mattered. Because at that moment, he was mine. Well, mine and Kate's. She did the hard work. But he was worth everything. And somehow I had an intense love for this new person. And it didn't matter what they did, what abilities they had. It didn't matter. None of that mattered because I loved him. And, you know, that's how Jesus thinks of us. He actually loves you because you are you. It's that simple. He just loves you. Not because of everything you do or everything you haven't done or all your abilities or what you look like or any of those things. He loves you because, if you can imagine, you know, if you are a parent and you can imagine that moment of holding a newborn baby, you imagine that love that you have. And you're going to do whatever you can to look after and protect that baby. And that's how God thinks of us. He loves us. So we need a revelation of who we are. He doesn't measure worth by what we can do, but by our value and our identity. It's who we are. He says, we are no longer slaves, so that yoke of slavery doesn't apply when we're walking with him. We are no longer slaves, but we are and we're no longer orphans, but we are children of God. As he says, I've made you heirs. You are my child. So it's really important to know that. We need a revelation of who we are. And it's also not just, yes, we can get the revelation once, but I found that we continually need that revelation. Because things can happen, and we're pulled in, you know, as trials go on, and actually that's a very good starting point to come back to think, God, what are you saying to me? I'm yours. Ah, okay. You love me. Yes, let's get this again. Let's get around this again. You love me. I'm valuable to you. That's the most important thing. And if you start trying to train yourself to start doing that, it's a really good place to start when you're in a crisis. Is go back to getting that revelation back of who you are. So we need to remember this stuff continually. So number four, fourth point, two steps for freedom that I've got, is take a risk. Take a risk. Dare to believe God and what he says about you. Take that step of deciding to trust him. Now, it may be, I can't really describe what that step will be because it will be different for every person. It may be just agreeing with him that you are valuable, but he might be asking you to trust him in any circumstance, but take a risk. Take a risk with him. It's an ongoing, the life of freedom is a life of trusting God. So that's why I say take a risk, it's trusting God. Number five, stand firm. That's what it says. It's for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then. So we have something to do too. Yeah, I said just now that it's not what we can do, it's about what God does for us. But there is something we can do. Now, this isn't something we do to earn freedom, but it is, we have a part to play. Because it's a relationship. It's we're connected with God. So, and our part is to stand firm. And sometimes, that's all we need to do, is put our feet on something firm, and dig in, and persevere, and keep standing, and recognising what's going on. No worries, it's not a problem. You know, I'm finding that sometimes God doesn't change the circumstances around us, but he changes us. And we need to be standing firm for us to be in a place that we can be changed in it. He doesn't promise that we won't have trials, but he does promise to be with us. He rescues us. And maybe that looks sometimes different to what we expect. And that's where we have to trust. James 1, verse 2 to 4 says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters." I love this verse. Not. "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance." How many people say trials are joyful? No, not really. Trials aren't joyful. So what does this mean? I mean, I'm not going yippee when another trial happens. Yay, come on. I mean, maybe some of you are. Some of those who love the adventure of it, but I believe it's looking at the outcome. It's looking at the outcome. Consider it pure joy. Jesus gives us a hint of this in Hebrews 12, 2, because he does this. He says, "For the joy set before him, he endured the cross." So I'm not sure that Jesus was saying, "Oh, I'm looking forward to dying and all of that." For everyone, I don't think that's probably what he was thinking. He had human emotions. It was a battle. In fact, he really laboured over it. How about take this cup from me, God? But no, not my will, but yours. There was an intense struggle in that. But it says, "For the joy set before him, he endured the cross." So I don't think it was saying, "Yes, bring it on, God. I'm ready for this." But it was because he saw what was to come as a result. And the joy set before him was us. We were the joy set before him. He knew that if he went through this, he would provide a way that we could be reconciled back to him, which we heard about last week, reconciled back in relationship, and we could begin that life of freedom. So, for him to go through that, but see us as the joy of it. How amazing is that? You are his joy. He saw through all of that, and saw you at the other side and said, "That was worth it. That's worth it for me going through it." Now, I may not be there yet. We're probably on that journey of seeing. But in going back to James, it says, "Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance." That's the standing firm. "Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." If we want to be complete, then this is the way. The joy is that we will be complete. We will be complete in our relationship, in our connection with him. And we will be what he has made us to be, not lacking anything. I want that. Not just practically not lacking anything, but not lacking anything, not that weakness, as it were, that we face. Now, we can't do it on our own. It's with God, and it's a lifelong thing. But that is the joy of, and consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. Now, I'm speaking theoretically, but in a... It's a hard thing to think about trials as joy sometimes. Well, they aren't joy, but think past that. So quite often God uses crises in our life to actually help us towards freedom. You know that. I'm not saying that he is the author of them, but he does say he'll turn things together, everything together for good for those who love him. And things that are meant for harm, he can actually turn, he has a way of turning them around for good. Or even the situation may not turn around for good, but he will do something in it that will change us, or that is for good. Because he's a good God. If we believe he's not a good God, then we need to go back to the beginning and believe and trust that he is good. So I'm just going to, I've been battling a little bit about sharing this, but I will. Last year, earlier on in the year, I experienced something that I hadn't really experienced before, where I felt like I hit a wall, mentally, physically, everywhere. I just stopped. And it resulted, I didn't know what was going on, which caused me quite a lot of stress and panic and anxiety. And things just went from bad to worse. And suddenly I felt like I couldn't cope with life. I couldn't cope with people. I didn't think I was going to survive the day. Something happened and I couldn't explain it. It was, and in all of that, I was feeling, God, I shouldn't feel like this. You know, you're bigger than this, you're whatever. And I couldn't fix myself. All of these things were happening, and it hit me very badly. And I don't know, other people may have experienced similar things like this. This was quite a new thing to me. And I felt a lot, gradually felt a little bit better, but it happened a number of times through the year until towards Christmas last year, it just got really bad. And I just couldn't get out of it. And medically, in terms of talking to a doctor, they were saying you've suffered some sort of burnout. I just again thought, no, that can't be me. I wasn't feeling stressed. I was just trying to say, no, that's not me. I'm, you know, and probably a lot of pride in there as well. And saying, well, I thought, God, I was, you know, I've been a Christian for 40 years. None of these things should affect me. Actually, it did. And I was in a pretty low place. In fact, so low that I remember very clearly saying to Kate one time that I feel completely, I don't know if I said I feel, I am completely useless. And I just don't think I'm ever going to be useful again. That's how I felt. I felt completely wrung out, completely low, desperate, that was it. It's all over. That's how I felt. And this was all quite new to me and scary. And I didn't know what to do. In that moment, I just cried out to God. I lay on my bed and I said, God, I have nowhere to go. I do not know what's happening to me. I can't think straight. My mind is going all over the place. I was having palpitations and all the physical things that go with sort of like panic attacks and things like that. I don't know what to do. The only thing I know, God, is that you love me, and all I can do is just hold on to you right now. That was it. It was like, I'm going to hold on. I'm going to throw out my hand and say, help me. I have nowhere else to go. And I felt him speak to me. Now this was big, because I wasn't hearing God speak to me too much through that, but I felt him speak to me at the time, just so that I can get it accurate. I've written it down. He said he would bring me to a place of wholeness and healing, and at that time I felt, no, I can't feel that, God. That's not what you're saying. And he knew that. He knew in his gentleness that I couldn't really believe what he was saying. And he said, I felt him say again to me, I will give you a sign of that. I thought, well, maybe we'll see. You know, I was a bit like that, but I decided to go for a walk just to get some fresh air. And as I was walking along, there was a moment in the walk where I suddenly felt, and I hadn't been feeling a lot apart from panic at that point, I felt that he loved me, not just up here in God, I know you love me, but I suddenly sort of felt love as I was, it was like he wrapped something around me. And in my emotions. And straight after that moment, a car drove past me, and I happened to notice the number plate. And the number plate said PH11LOV. And that, the words LOV was just, I felt, you know, okay, it hasn't got the E, but I felt it was got him saying, again, I love you. And he would just put it right out there, a bit like the rainbow, you know, from in Noah's time. But he put it out there physically for me as well. And then it started making me wonder, well, what does the PH11 mean? And somehow dropped into my mind, well, maybe it's a Bible verse. So I was sudden, I stopped, opened up my phone, got the Bible on it, and I opened up, I was drawn to Philemon 11. I don't know why, because I don't normally go into Philemon. I would have started with Philippians, but I went into Philemon 11, and this is what it says. Formerly, he was useless to you, but now he has become useful both to you and to me. Now, it absolutely just did me in. Because a few hours before, I'd said to Kate, those are the exact words I said to her, I feel completely useless and I don't feel I'll be ever useful again. And I didn't even know this verse existed in the Bible, but somehow he had managed to put that car in the right place that led me to this verse. And just to give me that encouragement that, you know, he's doing something. Now, it wasn't so much that I needed to feel useful to get my value, but there was something in me that felt, it just gave me hope that he was doing something that in me. Do you see what I mean? It says, it's interesting because I noticed it was saying it was about being useful, not doing useful. It wasn't, again, what I was doing, but it is in my being. He has made me to, you know, be useful in some way. And I think we all need to feel that in some way. It's not what I do, it's being in the place where I am designed to be. And so this word came out to me, but it didn't stop at that point. And I just, that would have been enough, you know, that would have been enough. Now, not everything changed. I didn't suddenly feel great. Ah, I'm all fixed. But what he did is he gave me a word to stand on. And that was where I started. One of those points, that's the word I could stand on. It was my hope. And as we go through the Christmas theme in the next few weeks, one of the Advent series is hope. And we all need hope. We all need that word to stand on. And that's my prayer, that people this season will hear that word for themselves to stand on. We'll hear about that next week. But so he gave me that word to stand on. And then this is crazy. Okay, this gets even crazier, because another car drove past. And I saw on, and this number plate was a bit strange as well, because it said J333JSH. Now, it just, again, leapt off the number plate to me. And I felt the JSH was short. It just, you know how sometimes it's, you don't have to think about it, God also drops the meaning into your mind. I felt it stood for Yeshua, the Hebrew word for Jesus. And I didn't know this at the time, but looking up, it actually means the Lord is my salvation. He is my way. Jesus is my way. So that's what you're saying. He is the way, and the truth, and life. But I continued on the Bible theme, because I was on one now. I was thinking, right, J333. Right, what is it? So I started at John 3:33. And it said, whoever has accepted it has certified that God is truthful. And I went back a little bit further as well to try and get a bit of context. But from what God was speaking to me at the time, he was asking me a question. Do I trust and accept that the word you've given me is my truth? He was asking me to engage with him in agreeing with him. Not just, right, I've got the word, that's it. It was a case of, now it's your part. You've got to stand firm and you're going to agree with me that that is what I'm saying. So I felt he was leading me on a journey. And I thought, right, this is really good. This is starting to do me some good. Now, because I'm a little bit, I don't know if skeptical is the wrong word, I want to make sure I'm right in this thing. I thought, well, what other J33s are there in the Bible? So I started going through all the possible options in case I've got the wrong one. And interestingly, Job was one, Job 33:3. I thought, nothing good can come out of Job. This is going to be really bad. But this is what it said. My words come from an upright heart. My lips sincerely speak what I know. The Spirit of God has made me. The breath of the Almighty gives me life. I was thinking, wow, that's pretty good as well. So you're encouraging me through that. And then the other one I found was Jeremiah 33:3. That was the other 3:3. And that says, call to me and I will answer you and tell you great and unsearchable things you do not know. I was thinking, I cannot escape from you, God. It was like he'd put those things, those verses there for me to find. And so suddenly I was just, you know, caught up in the fact that God, you're with me. You've spoken, there is hope, and I'm going to go on this journey with you. And that, to be honest, is what it's been. I'm still on the journey, but over the last year, God has been changing and tweaking the things, my thinking, in areas where I haven't been free. And he's been leading me bit by bit into, and as I say, I am on this journey. This is a work in progress. I am not there yet, so don't think that I've got all this sorted. But I can tell you that almost a week doesn't go by where God isn't just revealing something in me that he's putting his finger on. It's just not necessarily big things, but ways in which I have previously had thoughts that weren't is how I saw the world, how I saw God, which wasn't really what he was like. And so he's been undoing things in me and bringing me freedom to see things in a slightly different way and bringing freedom in my own emotions. And it's been a journey, and it has been tough, but I know that God is with me. And you know, it's hard for me to say, I wouldn't have said this at the time. And I bet anyone going through a real tough time won't say this at the time, but I'm glad that I've been through it. The reason I'm glad I've been through it is because I know that God is changing me in making me freer as a person. And my hope is that in what he's doing within me, he's going to help me to be freer to help free other people too. And to help me to love other people as he sees them and be freer in that way. So, yeah, I don't know if that helps you or not. It's a hard thing for me to share. I battled with it this week, to be honest. Probably out of, I don't know why. Getting it out there means I'm being sort of honest about a weakness, and to some extent that's a, you know, change people, you know, you don't want people to think good of you, etc. But, and I'm sure you all do think good of me. But you know how the enemy twists things, because you can't share things because it's a weakness and people, you know, don't want to hear that. But actually I think that is an enemy, is a lie of the enemy. We are who we are, and we need to share our weaknesses and the battles we're going through, and we need other people around us. And that's one thing actually that I will say is I am so thankful for, through this journey, that I've had some great friends who have been there for me. And they didn't have to do a lot. They might only just give me a hug and that was enough. Or sometimes they would send me a message that they felt God was saying, and that was enough. I didn't, you know, there's not loads that always that people can do. Sometimes, you know, we overdo it. We want to sort of try and fix people and make everything all right, and it's God who is the fixer of people. But asking him sometimes, what are you saying to me? How can I help that person? And sometimes it is just a coffee or a chat or a word of encouragement or a hug or whatever God's saying or a gift or all of those things. But let him guide you. Don't just make it up yourself. It's less stressful that way, believe me. I've tried, and it's much easier when God says, this is what you do. And do you know what? He gets it right. Yeah, it's brilliant. So, but I am so, so grateful for the people I've had on this journey. And that is why we need friends. With us, friends who we can be vulnerable and honest with. Friends who will accept us for who we are and go on that journey with us. And without those friends, I don't know where I'd be. We need God, we need friends, we need each other. So thank you for all those people who have helped me. It's about time to stop. I'll stop there. So just to summarise then, I think I've got a summary somewhere. It's a life of freedom. And it's an ongoing thing. It's for freedom Christ has set us free. Yeah. It's a journey of presence with God. It's not about performance. The key is relationship. It's being present. Present, his being present in your life, you being present with him. It's knowing who we are and whose we are. Who we are and whose we are. We are his. It takes trust. It takes surrender. It takes standing firm and perseverance. Not in our own strength, but with him helping us. But stand firm there. So hopefully that's helpful to you, and I'm just going to pray. Father, I just want to thank you that you are so good. I want to thank you. Lord, I know that without you, I don't know where I would be. But thank you, God, that you have rescued me and that you have rescued us. Father, I pray that in your amazing love and amazing grace that you would reveal to people today who need that word of hope, that need to know that they are yours, that you love them, that you haven't left them, that you come in to a situation and you be with them. Father, I pray this morning that you would encourage us to stand firm. You would encourage us to persevere, to hold on to the words that you have given us. And Father, I thank you for the friends we have around us. And Lord, I pray that you would deepen and grow those friendships. And Father, I pray that if there are those there who just need right now, Father, that they are at the beginning of that journey or in the middle of that circumstance where they don't know what to do, I just pray, Father, that you would just come in right now and rescue them. I pray that you would break those chains, that you would whisper to them that I'm no longer a slave to fear. I am a child of God. Those words that we sing. That you would give them the word in time that they need. And Father, put those people around them to encourage them and help them as well. Thank you, Jesus, that you are a good God, that you want us to be who you've designed us to be. You want us to be free to be those people you've designed us to be. Thank you, Father.